Welcome to Fresh Bread with Raymond McCulloch. Raymond is the former editor of Irish Christian magazine Bread and, with his wife Jerry, directs Kingdom Come Trust based in Northern Ireland. He has pastored and led worship for several years in Belfast and is currently involved in music and media production.
Hi, I'm Raymond McCulloch. Welcome to the 9th episode of our series, Fresh Bread, Your Kingdom Come, based on my recently published book, The Whore Under Muller, 9/11, Babylon, and the Return of the King. If you've missed the previous shows, don't worry. You can still play or download the podcast of previous shows from our website, kingdomcome.org.uk, or you can read the first few chapters of the book for free there, and you can download the relevant prophetic passages for your own study. You'll also find more information about the music and the content of each show, and you can read all the encouraging emails we receive about this and our previous shows. Here's one of them. Dear Pastor McCulloch, it is a joyous day here, and we ended our day and listened to your broadcast as we always do. You are a consistent source of unique programs for us, and we listen every Sunday as a habit of good choosing. Bless you in the work you are doing. Lynette Kiesler, Toronto, Canada. If you want to contact us, our email address is simply raymond@kingdomcome.org.uk, or just use the form on our website, kingdomcome.org.uk. In previous weeks, we've covered the preface, introduction, and the first five chapters of the book. Last week, we completed chapter 5, the second Exodus, and concluded 1. In the Hebrew prophecies, Judah and Israel are inseparable. What applies to the one applies to the other. 2. The northern kingdom of Israel, the 10 tribes, were completely removed from the land and scattered to the four corners of the earth. The return of these lost tribes to Israel, separated from the land for 2,700 years, would be a miracle of truly biblical proportions. 3. At least 1,400 of the lost tribe of Manasseh are now living in Israel. 25,000 more have applied to make Aliyah and are only being held up by Israeli bureaucracy and reluctance. 4. Other tribes in Asia and Africa have been identified as Israelite, some, such as the Lemba, with the backup of DNA analysis. Many are no longer followers of the Jewish religion, but may be Christian or Muslim. Some are already keen to come to Israel, others, at present, show little interest. 5. Like the former Red Sea crossing, God will dry up the river Euphrates, the Nile, and the Red Sea, so that his people can again cross over and return to the land of Israel. And 6. Perhaps 90 million Israelites in total exist throughout the world today. If they all return to the land, it will make the biblical Exodus seem insignificant and change the face of the Middle East. We are already seeing this miracle beginning to happen. As we watch, we will see it being fulfilled more and more. Before we begin chapter 6, Why Judge Mega Babylon? We're going to listen to Rodney Corner and Jean-Pierre Rudolph from Northern Ireland and France with a song called Down by the Lagan Side.
When we dance together. When we cry, we hold each other. When we love forever. Down by the Lagan Side. I thought you were a vision that stopped me with a smile. Down by the river, we walked along in style. You said, now welcome back again, and won't you stay a while? Down by the Lagan Side. And when we dance together. Oh, when we cry, we hold each other. And when we love forever. Down by the Lagan Side. I said, who owns the music so full of joy and pain that the piper and the harper and the lambeg drummer play? You said, who owns the teardrops falling in the rain? Down by the Lagan Side. And when we dance together. And when we cry, we hold each other. And when we love forever. Down by the Lagan Side. Thank you. dance together. When we cry, we hold each other. And when we love forever. Down by the Leggins side. And don't you well remember, we once walked side by side, and the bells of Belfast City sang harmony and pride. The past it has been taken, but the future's yours and mine, down by the Leggins side. And when we dance together. Oh, when we cry, we hold each other. And when we love forever. Down by the Leggins side.
Chapter 6, Why Judge Mega Babylon? Billy Graham's daughter was interviewed on The Early Show, and Jane Gleason asked her regarding Hurricane Katrina, how could God let something like this happen? Anne Graham-Lotz gave an extremely profound and insightful response. She said, I believe God is deeply saddened by this, just as we are. But for years we've been telling God to get out of our schools, to get out of our government, and to get out of our lives. And being the gentleman he is, I believe he has calmly backed out. How can we expect God to give us his blessing and his protection if we demand he leave us alone? In light of recent events, terrorist attacks, school shootings, etc., I think it started when Madeleine Murray O'Hare, she was murdered, her body found a few years ago, complained she didn't want prayer in our schools, and we said, okay. Then someone said, you better not read the Bible in school. The Bible says, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and love your neighbour as yourself. And we said, okay. Why is Mega Babylon to be destroyed? What is her major offence that the judgment of total destruction should come upon her? There is more than just one simple answer to this. The basic answer lies in the description of Mega Babylon as a prostitute. Her first crime was to have a once deserved reputation as a godly nation, but then to move away from that more and more over recent years. The Bible calls this playing the harlot. This would apply to the United Kingdom and other Western nations also, which have drifted far from their Judeo-Christian roots. Can any nation be truly described as Christian these days? I doubt it. The details are in where this drift has led. The harlot is described over and over, like the ancient Babylonian goddess Ishtar, as holding a cup of filth with which she has made the nations drunk. What does this filth represent? Revelation 17, 4 and 5. The woman was dressed in purple and scarlet, and was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. She held a golden cup in her hand, filled with abominable things and the filth of her adulteries. The name written on her forehead was a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. Fornication. Of course, our first thoughts are of pornography, permissiveness, and Hollywood movies, which may surely be a part of the story. After all, the USA is the world's top exporter of pornography. But there is something more basic involved here. The God of the Bible does not look upon the outward appearance. He looks upon the heart, 1 Samuel 16:7, the heart of the whole globalization movement, of which the US government, bankers, the IMF, and Federal Reserve are the hub, is focused on what used to be known as filthy lucre. Greed for monetary gain is the basic motivation behind the corporate disregard for anything just, righteous, or holy. For the sake of the bottom line, individuals and corporations will sacrifice any moral imperatives, any thought of justice for the poor, any regard for the Almighty. Corporations, of course, have no morals. They are a self-perpetuating machine. If caught in gross breach of the law, they will make some member of their management a scapegoat, but the corporation marches on, unrepentant. The Exxon Valdez tanker disaster in the Prince Rupert Sound, Alaska, is just one case in point. Incidentally, the real culprits there were British Petroleum, BP, who owned 50% of the shares, as opposed to Exxon, who only had 10%. The vast bulk of the promised compensation has never been paid out, and most likely never will be. The hunting and fishing way of life of the Chugach people has been destroyed forever. But who cares? Certainly not the corporations involved. Will those same corporations make things right in the Gulf of Mexico? I won't hold my breath. The major banks and corporations in the USA and beyond control the wealth of the country and also of most of the global economy. They have the power to raise up and put down presidents, to manipulate stock and share values, the banking system, the economies of the United States and most of the rest of the world. The willful destruction of Argentina's economy by the IMF in 2001 is just one example of the ruthless behaviour of our global rulers. Now the same forces are destroying Greece, Ireland, Portugal. Where have all the billions of dollars gone out of our economies? Did they just evaporate? Or are we being cynically manipulated by big business in order that they should gain even more control over our lives? This cynical, uncaring, bottom-line policy rides roughshod over all of us. Who gains? Only a select elite. Who loses? You, me, and most of the decent ordinary citizens of the USA and other nations. But most of all, the losers are those who are weakest, the marginal third world developing countries, in other words, the poor. Alex Perry, in his book Falling Off the Edge, examines many different groups around the world who are being destroyed by the uncaring and heartless global system.
Stay.
That was the band One Week of Days from Kilkenny in Ireland and Song of Songs. The powerhouse of world globalization is centered in Wall Street, New York City, in the US Federal Reserve, which, like Federal Express, is not federal. It is a private entity, not answerable to the US Senate, the President, or anyone else, in the IMF and the World Bank. All of these entities are linked and working together towards their own agenda. While many rant about the dangers of world communism and Islamic fundamentalism, and maybe with good reason, a small, self-effacing elite group are taking more and more control of our lives. They are quite prepared to instigate wars, famines, global crises, economic meltdown, drug addiction, and maybe even epidemics. Why not? They can make a fortune from our misfortunes, so why should they worry about the morality of it? These guys have no morality. Let's look at some specific prophecies which describe why the God of Israel is angry with Mega Babylon and why he will ultimately bring great judgment and disaster upon her. Revelation 17:1-3. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits by many waters. With her, the kings of the earth committed adultery, and the inhabitants of the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries." Then the angel carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had seven heads and 10 horns. First of all, the prostitute is mounted on a scarlet beast. The beast is covered with blasphemous names. The nature of the beast is in total opposition to the God of the Bible. Revelation 18, verse 3, "For all the nations have drunk the maddening wine of her adulteries. The kings of the earth committed adultery with her, and the merchants of the earth grew rich from her excessive luxuries." Revelation 17, 23, "Your merchants were the world's important people. By your magic spell, all the nations were led astray." And Isaiah 47, verse 9, "Both of these will overtake you in a moment, on a single day, loss of children and widowhood. They will come upon you in full measure, in spite of your many sorceries and all your potent spells." This opposition to the God of the Bible has opened up Mega Babylon to all kinds of evil, including sorcery. The Greek word used here for magic spell or sorcery is pharmakeia, from which we get our English word pharmacy, that is, the use of drugs. In the Bible, the use of drugs was completely tied up with the practice of sorcery and was totally forbidden, as it was an act of rebellion against the Lord. Mega Babylon has polluted the world through the lure of excessive luxuries, funded through the propagation of the drug trade worldwide. Michael C. Ruppert was a former LAPD investigator into the drugs trade. In the course of investigations in the mid-70s, he came across information that the CIA was trading drugs in order to fund covert operations in the Middle East, People magazine, 1992. In his 2004 book, Crossing the Rubicon, he writes that one of the biggest secrets of 9/11 is the connection between drug money and Wall Street. In this context, it is not surprising that the US completed its invasion of Afghanistan in November 2001 in the middle of the opium planting season. Among the first things the US forces and CIA did was to liberate a number of known opium warlords who, they said, would assist US forces. Opium farmers rejoiced and, amid reports that they were being encouraged to do so, began planting massive opium crops. In December, former CIA asset and opium warlord Ayub Afridi was released from prison and recruited by the CIA to unify local leaders against the Taliban. When the harvest of June 2002 came, Afghanistan had again become the world's largest producer of the opium poppy and the world's largest heroin supplier. From a paltry 180 tons under the Taliban in 2001, according to the UN, the estimated 2002 harvest under CIA protection was close to 3,700 tons. By March of 2003, World Bank President James Wolfensohn was reporting record levels of opium production, and the drugs were a bigger earner for Afghanistan than foreign aid. The 2003 crop set new records, coming in at almost 4,000 tonnes, and experts warned that the June 2004 harvest might be 50% larger than that of 2003. In November of 2003, Reuters reported that current Afghan opium cultivation was 36 times higher than under the last year of Taliban rule. This exploitation of the drug trade for economic benefit has, of course, been ongoing for a very long time, originally pioneered by the British Empire, the mother of the present-day American Empire. Robert states, "The use of the drug trade to secure economic advantage for an imperialist nation is at least as old as the British East India Company's first smuggling of opium from India into China in the late 1600s. This practice led eventually to the Opium Wars between Britain and China in the mid-19th century. Incidentally, it's probable that the many billions of dollars revenue from this sudden increase in Afghan heroin production were used to fund the massive subprime mortgage boom in 2002 to 2006, which, we are told, led to the present worldwide economic collapse, which began in 2008.
Thank you.
Lowcountry Boys from County Down, Northern Ireland, with two instrumentals, The Old Crosscut Saw and Hector the Hero. Let's sum up what we've covered today. Why will Mega Babylon be judged by God and completely destroyed? Firstly, Mega Babylon is the leading force behind world globalization. Her merchants were the world's great men, Revelation 18:23. Wall Street, the Federal Reserve, and the leading American corporations control and manipulate the world economy. She has corrupted the whole world with her market-dominated philosophy, destroying many innocent people as a result. Secondly, because of her many sorceries in Greek pharmakia, the riches and economic strength of this evil empire are founded upon a colossal income from illegal drugs, especially heroin from Afghanistan and cocaine from Colombia, leading to the destruction of the lives of those addicted to them. Judgment is coming. Join us again next week for the second part of Chapter 6, Why Judge Mega Babylon. Remember, if you want to buy the book, The Whore and Her Mother, go to our website, kingdomcome.org.uk. Slán agus bána dia. Bye and God bless.
This series is produced by Precious Oil Productions for Kingdom Come Trust. For more information about the series, Bible notes and recordings of previous talks, check out our website at www.kingdomcome.org.uk or write to PO Box 200, Belfast, Northern Ireland, BT 23 7TZ.